Now we're holding on Kuf
Morning.
Vav Amr
Morning.
Aleph by the Mishnah. The Mishnah describes, the Mishnah says, here's another case where a person is saying, I'm selling you a base core of land, where so far we had where he just says Stam, where he says Hein Choser, Hein Yeser, where he says Midr B'Chevel. So now we have another one. B'simona V'Mitzara. He says, I'm selling you this piece of land. And I'm marking it off based on its simonim or based on its borders. So basically, whatever you see that's within these borders. So he might tell him, for example, it begins at that particular tree or that particular rock. And it might be that he says, for example, that it's bordered by Reuven's field on this side and Shimon's field on that side and so forth. So that also means then that because he's mentioning the Simon of Mitzarev, then therefore there's more leeway in how much more or less than a base chord it could be. Therefore, pochas mishtus higioi ad shtus yinake. So if it's less than if the difference is less than 1/6, then the sale is final. And if it's up and if it's up and if it's up to a sixth. Meaning more than a sixth, and we'll see in the Gemara about a sixth itself, Yinaka, that he should deduct from the price appropriately. Meaning, in other words, that Ashbam says, previously we said when he said Hein Choser, Hein Yeser, then we allow a difference, we allow a variation of only up to 1/24. Here we're saying we're allowing up to 1/6, which is four times as much. So the Ashbam explains because, so when he said when so first of all, by saying base core offer, we already established before we had in the Gemara that if he says that if he doesn't say mid bechevel, if he doesn't say measured with a rope, then it means we allow up to 1/24. And now when he said b'simonav, so it means even more so. It means once he showed him the various borders, so it's as if basically he's saying, here's the field as is, take it or leave it. So the fact that he said base core means at least it has to approximate the size of a base core, but you might have a much higher tolerance for a difference, namely up to 1/6. That's how the Rashbam explains it, that the difference is, again, in other words, if he had just said base core offer on imoicholach, then he would be able to they'd be able to have a difference of up to 1/6. And that would be fine, but because he also added the words, b'simonav, that I'm selling it to you based on the borders and the based on the landmarks and the borders, then therefore that makes that there's even more, that there's even a higher tolerance, and it can be up to 1/6 different than an actual base core. So it could be as much as 1/6 of a base core. We said it's 30 sa, so it could be only 20, it could be only a little over 25 sa, and then you would still have, and then you would still say higioi, that the sale is final, and we would say that he's moichel. What happens if it's exactly 1/6? That we'll see in the Gemara. Anyway, there are a couple of other explanations of exactly why it should be that we should allow such a large leeway of 1/6. The Shita Mekubetzes explains and brings a couple of other explanations. He brings from the Ravid that the difference is that here the buyer is actually standing there and seeing the land. So therefore, so he's willing to accept to buy that piece of land implicitly. Then fine. In other words, we haven't measured it exactly, but he's willing to accept that that as long as there's not too much of a discrepancy, then it'll be fine. Then the Shitva Kubetzis brings from the Re'eim. Usually, Re'eim stands for Rabbi Eliyahu Mizrahi, the famous Rav who wrote one of the earliest commentaries on Rashi, the Mizrahi. Whether that's the same Re'eim that the Shitva Kubetzis is referring to, I don't know. Anyway, he gives a different. He says like this, that our case of b'simanav of Mitzarav is sort of in between the two previous cases. When he says midah b'chevel, then it means it has to be exact because it means measured with a rope. And when he said hein choser, hein yeser, then he's saying it might be a little less, a little more, and then we have a leeway of up to 1/24. B'simanav of Mitzarav is sort of in between them. So he's mentioning the boundaries and the landmarks, but he's only saying. But he's on, but he, but he's, but he's saying a base core. So therefore, therefore, you can have a leeway of up to 1/6. Anyway, so there are different girsos over here. Exactly, the Rashbam brings the girsa that it's the girsa is supposed to be as we have it. Pachas mishtus. If the difference is less than 1/6 higiyoi, then the sale is final. Ad shtus yinake. But if it's up to 1/6, meaning anything from 1/6 and above, then he has to deduct. Then there are various girsois in it among Rishonim of the exact words of the Mishnah. Plus, on top of that, the Maharshal goes and edits the wording in Rashbam, and then Maharshal discusses why did Maharshal need to do that? The Gemara is going to have a machlokas. What happens if it's exactly 1/6 on the face of it? If the Mishnah is saying ad shtus. If the Mishnah is saying ad shtus up to 1/6 yinake, then he should deduct. Then that automatically would mean 1/6 itself, and then therefore there'd be and the Gemara is going to be bringing the machlokas of what happens exactly 1/6. So Maharshal changes the girsa in Rashbam, and Maharshal says maybe it's not necessary to change the girsa. In any case, the point there are actually different gusois of exactly. Tosfos also brings that the Tosfos brings the same gusa as the Rashbam, and then they say that there's a different gusa pochus shtus. If it's less by 1/6 than higiyoi, then it's final, and then we would have to say that in the Gemara when they're arguing about 1/6 means, in other words, because they would understand that when the Mishnah mentions 1/6, it means a little less than 1/6. In any case, the Mishnah is saying that if again you have a base kur which is supposed to be 30 saw, and here he says b'simanav v'matzarav. So we're saying if in fact it turns out to be not a base kur which is 30 saw, but let's say it comes out to be 25 or 26 or whatever, then he giyoy, then the sale is final. Or not 25, 26 or 27 or whatever, then the sale is final. If it's 24 or less, 24.5 or whatever or less, then he has to adjust the price accordingly, because that's too much. Although that's too much of a difference, too much of a margin of error for us to assume that the buyer would be willing to accept it without some kind of adjustment to the price. When it's exactly 1/6, when it was supposed to be 30, and instead it's 25, that would be, which is where the difference is 5, which is 1/6 of 30, that you have the machlokas in the Gemara. So the Gemara starts off, Itmar, so we have a discussion about that point. Rav Huna Amar Shtus Kepachas Mishtus. Rav Huna says that if the difference is exactly 1/6, then that's the equivalent of less than a sixth, and therefore we would say that he's moichel on it. Rav Yehuda Amar Shtus Kiyosim Mishtus, and Rav Yehuda says 1/6 would be considered exactly like 1/6. Meaning, in other words, that then we would say that we have to adjust the price. By the way, the Rashbam points out over here that when we say the difference over here of 1/6 and then more and less than 1/6, it has nothing to do with the dinim of Aina. We learned the same. We have the same margin of 1/6 when it comes to the dinim of Aina, but Aina doesn't apply to Karka. It only applies to Metalpilin. So it's rather the Chachamim figured out, the Chachamim evaluated based on their knowledge of human psychology, that a person is willing to forego up to 1/6 and 1/6 itself, according to Rav Huna, but not more than that. So again, Rav Huna is saying that if the field was 22 or 23 or 24, then you have a problem. You have to make an adjustment to the price. But if it was 25, then already we say he's moichel. And certainly if it was 26 or 27 or whatever, whereas Rav Yehuda says 25 exactly out of 30 would be that wouldn't be mechila, and therefore we have to adjust the price. So let's explain. Rav Huna Omer Shtus Kepachas Mishtus, because he learns like this. Hachi Kamar, he says the Mishnah means to say like this. Pachas Mishtus, when the difference is less than 1/6, Ur Shtus Bechlal, and that includes 1/6 as well, Higiyoi, then the sale is final, as is. Yosem Mishtus Yenaka, only if the difference is more than 1/6, only then does he have to deduct from the price. So in other words, he says, when the Mishnah says, Ad shtus, again, according to the girsa that we have in front of us, and according to the girsa that the Rashbam has, at least according to the printed at least according to the printed Rashbam in front of us, then ad shtus means up to and including ad va'ad b'chlal, 1/6. He would say ad v'loy ad b'chlal. He would say that the ad shtus means up to 1/6, but not including 1/6 itself. And that's when yinaka, as opposed to when he would say, when the Mishnah says pachas mishtus, less than 1/6, that means also including the 1/6 itself. Rav Yehuda says the 1/6 is like the din of more than 1/6. So he says the Mishnah means pachas mishtos higiyai, when it's specifically less than 1/6, then the sale is final. But ad shtus, or shtus b'chlal, but when it's up to and including 1/6, because he holds that ad means v'ad b'chlal, yinake, then he has to deduct from it. So in other words, according to him, the ad means ad b'chlal. So two different ways of learning the Mishnah. So the Gemara says Meisvi. I have a contradiction on Rav Huna. A braisa specifies in more detail. B'simon of a metzara, a person is selling a field and he gives the landmarks or the borders of it, like we had in the Mishnah. Pichas shtus or hosus shtus. So if he gives less by 1/6 or more by 1/6, harehu kishum hadayonim, then we treat that din like the case where the dayonim evaluate, or the beis din evaluates the value of field. You have a case that Rashbam refers to, a case in Masechta Ksubas, where beis din is evaluating the property of yisomim. For example, you have, let's say, you have, for example, that a man has passed away and his yoshim inherited his property. Now his widow is coming to collect mezonos because she's entitled to mezonos just like she was when her husband was alive, until she collects uksuba, or until she comes to collect uksuba, whatever is discussed in detail over there in uksubas. So there can come a point where beis din has to go and take some land that belongs to the yisomim and evaluate the value of it and put it up for auction and sell it in order to raise money for her mezonos. And the same thing for the daughters. We're going to talk about later in our masechta that there's a tekonas chachamim that the daughters get a certain amount of money for their food and other maintenance until they get married. Until they're a marriageable age, at least. Anyway, the point is, sometimes beis din has to do that. They have to go and evaluate the value of a piece of property in order to put it up for auction and sell it. So now in Masechta Ksubas, it says over there that if they made a mistake in the valuation by 1/6 or more, then we actually have a machlokas or Shimon Gamliel in the Chachamim, and so where the Chachamim say that in that case, then we have to undo it. The sale that was done based on the evaluation is no good, and we have to start all over again. So we have a piece of land that was supposed to be worth 60, for example, and they evaluated it as being worth only 50, let's say. So that would be a difference of 1/6. So then we say that's no good, and we have to go and take back the field and start all over again. So the Braisa is comparing the case of our Mishnah, with Simon of Mitzarev, to that case of Shumah Dayonim. So again, so the Braisa is saying that b'simon of a matzara pichas shtus or hosu shtus harehu kishuma dayanim, if the land was less than a base core by 1/6 or more than a base core by 1/6 or hosu shtus harehu kishuma dayanim, then it's like the din of shuma dayanim. And he gioi, and the sale is not bottle. Now, so we just have to adjust the price. Vashuma dayonim, the shtuski, vashuma dayonim, the shtuski yosem shtusu. Now, in the case of shuma dayonim, when they make a mistake in the valuation, if it's exactly 1/6, then that has the same din as when they made a mistake of more than 1/6. So, in our case, where we have, let's say, a field that's supposed to be worth 60. And based in mistakenly evaluated as being 50 or 49 or 48 or whatever, then in all those cases, we would say that it's no good. It's not a proper valuation. Now, so by the same token, then, since the Braise is comparing that to our case, so that should mean by the same token, our field is supposed to be So let's say to keep the numbers the same, let's say our field is supposed to be 2 base kur, which is 60 sa, and instead it's 50 or 49 or 48, etc. Then we're saying that that's no good. So whereas Rav Huna is saying that if it turned out to be 50, then he gio, then that's it. The sale is final. So how does this braisa fit with Rav Huna? And the answer is Amalach Rav Huna. Rav Huna will answer you back. V'li taimech nu, and according to your svara that you're asking the question, the fact is he gioi katani. The fact is the braisa says that even in that case, where it's more or less than one, that where the difference is more than 1/6, he gioi. It says that the sale is final. Whereas with Shuma Dayanim, it's not. Then we say that we undo it, and then we undo the Shuma Dayanim. So when it comes to the Shuma Dayanim, then you have Reb Shimon Gamliel arguing and saying that you have to allow a leeway of even 1/6 or more because he's in Cain Ma Koyach based in Yoffa. Because he says, in other words, that even though Beis Din made a large mistake like that, nevertheless, we have to show deference to Beis Din's decision, and we have to allow it to stay that way. In any case, the point is, so you have to say, therefore, that our Braisa must be like Reb Shimon Gamliel. Well, then, in that case, says Rav Huna, then just the opposite. The Braisa shows like what I'm saying. So even when it was exactly 1/6, then we say higiyoy. And listen, the Braisa is saying when it comes to Shuma Dayanim, even if the difference is more than 1/6, then higiyoy. So you're trying to question me from the ratio of the Braisa, which says that pichis shtusa hoisu shtus hareyu kashuma dayonim, and you're telling, and shuma dayonim, when they make a mistake of exactly 1/6, is the equivalent of a mistake of more than 1/6. But since the braisa is continuing higiyoy, then on the contrary, clearly this braisa is going according to Reb Shimon Gamliel. So it's no contradiction on me. Ella kishuma dayonim v'lo kishuma dayonim. Rather, says Rav Huna, what we have to answer is that. The Braisa means to compare it to Shuma Dayanim, but not a complete comparison. Now you have different gersois over here. That Ashbam points out there's a difference over here of whether we say Ella or Hagoyes Habach brings a different gersa, which would be according to the Ashbam, Omer Le Rav Yehuda, that Rav Yehuda answers him. So because the Rashbam prefers to say that the Gemara is not actually the Gemara is not going to end up with something that's going to be a question on either Rav Huna or Rav Yehuda. We're going to say that both Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda have ways of understanding the Braisa that fits with their respective opinions. So in the end we would have Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda can each bring a proof from this Braisa, or at least they can say that this Braisa doesn't contradict them. The girsa that we have in front of us, Ella, would mean rather that the Gemara is that the Gemara is rejecting the previous explanation of the Braisa and explaining it specifically according to Rav Huna. So Ashbam brings in that connection that those who explain it that way would say that Rav Huna is pointing out there seems to actually be a mistake in the text of the Braisa, and you have to amend the Braisa, and then once you do, it'll be more in accordance with his opinion. So again, two ways of understanding: is it that the Braisa can be made to work equally well according to Rav Huna or according to Rav Yehuda, or is it that necessarily there's something wrong with the Braisa and we have to amend it? Anyway, the Gemara is explaining that what the Braisa means is kishuma dayonim, that we're comparing it to shuma dayonim, v'loy kishuma dayonim, but not exactly like the case of shuma dayonim. Kishuma dayonim l'shtus, it is like shuma dayonim in the sense that the leeway that we allow in this case is 1/6, the same as we do by shuma dayonim, where again, if the dayonim had taken a field that's supposed to be worth 60, and they evaluated it as being worth 51, then we say we don't contradict what they did. We allow the field to be auctioned off beginning at 51. So in that sense, we have the same margin of error, the same 1/6 applies here and there. V'loy k'shuma dayanim, but not exactly like the shuma dayanim, d'ilohosam botol mekach, in that case of shuma dayanim, when they make such a large mistake, of shtus or more, then botol mekach, then the sale will be voided, and we're going to say that no, you had no business evaluating this field as 50. Go back and start the auction over again, evaluating it at its correct value of 60 or close to that. Whereas over here we would say that when the difference is 1/6, then the sale stands as is, and there's no adjustment. So again, we can say then that the Braisa is that the Braisa would work according to either Rav Huna or Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda would answer back in other words, so here Rav Huna is asking, how can the Braisa be saying higiyoi when if you're comparing it to Shuma Dayanim? So Rav Yehuda would be answering that the Braisa only means to compare it as far as the fact that in both cases the difference is 1/6, but not as far as what happens when it's exactly 1/6, because by Shuma Dayanim it would be then Botol Mekach, and over here we would say exactly 1/6, then we would say the sale is final, but an adjustment has to be made. Meanwhile, Rav Huna would understand the Braisa to be saying that when it's exactly 1/6, then higiyoi, then the sale is final as is without even any adjustments. So again, that's the girsa that the Rashbam prefers without the word ella, but rather omale. Whereas the second girsa with ella means that Rav Huna himself is for inferring the Braisa and saying that the Braisa itself has a mistake in it, and you have to correct the wording of it, and then it comes out fitting with Rav Huna's opinion. So in any case, that makes a difference also. If we say that the Braisa has to be adjusted because there's a mistake and it has to be amended because there's a mistake in it to make it, and then once we do, then we find that it supports Rav Huna's opinion, then that would be a reason to paskin like Rav Huna. On the other hand, if we say that Rav Yehuda answers, I have a perfectly good way of inferring the Braisa myself, then that doesn't mean, then we don't have a proof one way or the other between Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda. In the end, the poskim paskim like Rav Huna, which is that when it's exactly 1/6, then higiyoi, then the sale is final and there's no adjustment. Okay. So the Gemara tells a story in this connection. Rav Papa zoban aramau hu gavra. Rav Papa bought a piece of land from a certain person. Omalei, and the guy told him before he sold it to him, have your estrin grivi. This land is 20 grivi. A grivi is generally translated as a saw, and that's how the Rashbam translates over here. It's the Aramaic word. Literally, griva is the Aramaic word for a measure, and a saw is the most typical measure that people would use. Earlier in the Masechta, when we had the stories of Rava Baba Chana, and we had mention of Aboy and Grivi, then that Rashbam had explained over there that Grivi meant Kurim, whatever the case. So it contains 20 of something, 20 of some unit. Mashche, well, Rav Papa measured the land, he measured it himself, we hire a surveyor or whatever. V'loy havoy al chamestra. It turned out it was only 15.
Oh,
15 versus 20, that's a much bigger variation, a much bigger margin of error than the 1/6 that we said in the Mishnah. Even Rav Huna would have to agree that in that case, then we have to make an adjustment to the price. Also, l'kamei d'abaya, so he came for a din Torah to Abaya, but Abaya tells him, no, savret v'kiblet, v'kabilas, no, you understood that you're getting a land of this size, and you were willing to accept it. So Papa asked, what do you mean? Vatan pochus mishtusi giyoi ad shtus yinaka. What do you mean? The Mishnah is saying that when the difference is 1/6 according to Rav Yehuda, or more than 1/6 according to Rav Huna, then yinaka, you have to deduct from the price. Here you have a much larger difference than that.
Well, listen, did he say that he's under
Simonim of a Mitzarim? He said, I'm selling you this land, and he marked it off with the Simonim and the Mitzarim like an Amish.
But the guy lied.
No, wait. So Rav, so Rabbi explains to him, Hanimili, hechidole kimle begavo. You know what we would say that that the allowable margin of error is only 1/6 is only when the lekeach doesn't actually know is not actually familiar with the field. Here, you, the papa, before you bought it, you were familiar with this field. You knew that it's not full 20 in size. So therefore you were evidently willing to accept it. You were familiar and you knew that this land is not 20. So then some of a kibble. So then you accepted it as is, even if the difference is greater. But Rapapa says, what do you mean? He told me that's 20 sa in size. So that means, in other words, that he himself apparently didn't know the size of it. So what do you mean sa of a kibble? It's one thing if he knew and I knew. So evidently he must have meant that. That it's true, this land is not full 20, but I'll give you other land eventually to make up the difference. So why should I have to accept it as is? Amalei, Abaya says no, because you could still say da'adifa ka'estrian, because he could understand it. He could say that it meant that he meant he knew that it's only 15, but he meant that it's good land. It's as good as a land of 20 saw someplace else. So therefore, so he's not obligated to give you anything else, and you have to accept it. As is. And that ends up being the din now. To be sure, the Yad Rama points out we would have to then go and evaluate the field and see whether a taka is worth as much as a field of 20 someplace else. Is it idis? If not, then fine, then we need an adjustment. But in other words, the point is, in the Mishnah we were talking about where the seller, now in the Mishnah, we said the Shittim Kabetzis brings from the Raivad that we're talking about that he's actually standing there and looking at the field when he's buying it. But even so, we could say he's looking at it, but that doesn't mean he knows offhand how large it is. Here, Abaya is telling the papa, you were actually familiar with this plot of land, and you yourself knew that it's not 20. So therefore, even though he told you 20, then we have to reinterpret what he says and solve of a kibble. And therefore, the difference of 1/6, as it says in the Mishnah, doesn't apply in this kind of case. It doesn't apply to Karka. That's that. The Rashbam made that point in Amud Aleph.
Well, you can't say he's a liar, right?
So you could say whatever you want, but the fact is, we don't have to say that he's a liar. We could say that he meant that it's as good as Rapapa also didn't consider the guy to be a liar. He thought, though, that since the guy himself said 20, and apparently he didn't realize that it's less than 20, so he evidently meant I'm pledging that because in return for the money you paid me, I'm going to give you 20. If this land itself contains 20, then good. And if not, then I'll make it up for you with another piece of land someplace else. But Abaya is saying there's no need to assume that he meant that. It could equally well mean that he's saying that it is physically only 15 in size, but it's as valuable as a piece of land 20 in size someplace else.
Somewhere else makes it, you have to double work.
Fine, but nevertheless, though, okay. Now, the Gemara is going to end up bringing a case over here, which bears on our Mishnah. Now our Mishnah. So the Gemara is going to be kind of digressing now to a different topic. So in our Mishnah, we're talking about where a person expected to get a certain size land, and instead he gets less than that. And then we're saying you have the 1/6 versus more versus less than 1/6, or we have Rapapa's case. Now the Gemara is going to end up talking about a case where you have brothers or partners or whatever divide up a piece of land, and then unexpectedly it turns out, let's say brothers, and then unexpectedly it turns out they have another brother and he wants his portion. So further on down on the Amud, the Gemara is going to deal with that case. So you have, let's say, two brothers split up their father's inheritance, and let's say, to keep things simple, that there's no bechor over there, so we don't have to deal with double portions, which we're going to deal with in detail in the next parak. So each of them gets half. Now, all of a sudden, one day, a third person comes and brings evidence that he's their brother. From a different marriage or whatever. Yeah. So then he's going to have to get his portion as well. So what do we do in order to give him his portion, given that they already split it up among themselves? So the Gemara is going to deal with that point further down on the Amud. So by way of preface to that, then first the Gemara is going to bring a din as far as the division of the property in the first place. What makes that the division is final? So the Gemara says, Tanya Rabbi Yosi Omer, Ha'achen Shecholku, when brothers divide up their inheritance, the same thing would be with partners as well, Rashbam points out. Kiven Sha'ola Girdle Echad Mehem, so many times what they would do is they would make a girdle to determine who's going to get what part. Now we're talking about as far as dividing karka. I mean, it's possible to do a girdle for metaltlin as well. And the Rashbam points out further on that the same din that we're talking about over here would apply both to karka and to metaltlin. On the other hand, there are Rishonim who learn that no, the din that we're talking about over here would apply strictly to karka. Metaltlin would have a different din. Anyway.
You suddenly can collect from the talk of fiat.
No, we're not talking about as far as a Baal Chayv collecting. A Baal Chayv collecting, actually, we're going to take up the point tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, on Daf Kuf Zayin. We're going to talk about what happens if the brothers divided up the estate, and all of a sudden it turns out that there was a Baal Chayv that their father owed money to, and he's going to be taking away from the land. How do we do so that neither one is having to bear the brunt of it? We're going to talk about that tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. But first, right now, we're first dealing in a general way, how do we make the division, and what makes it that the division is final? So again, one way is that they would make a girdle. So Rabbi Yossi says, Ha'achan Shecholku, Kiven Sha'ola Girdle, La'echad Mehem, as soon as the girdle is done for one of them, Konu Kulam, then all of them are Koine. Meaning, and neither one can back out of it. So, in other words, the Rashbam says, if we have two brothers, then it means once we pick the girdle and it says Reuven gets this portion, then automatically, without any further kinyan, Shimon gets the other portion. If we have three brothers or more, then it means once the girdle was picked and Reuven gets his, then what it means is that one, he's koina, without any reservation, and they can't change their mind and say we would have done the division differently. As far as the other two, they have between them the remaining portions, and they can divide it between them whenever they want, whether by a girdle or whether in some other way. And the Rashbam adds, of course, if they did the girdle and they actually picked out Reuven gets this, Shimon gets this, Levi gets this, then there's no question, obviously, then it means that all of them are koiner. And the reason that Rashbam also add, they don't need a chazaka on the karka or anything, because they're already mochsik in the karka. The karka belonged to their father, and all they need to do now is decide which one of them gets what.
We don't need any digging.
We don't need any new act of chazaka in order for him to become the owner of the particular part. Now, again, the Rashbam says that this same din would apply as far as metaltlin as well, although there are Rishonim who disagree with that. So my timer, why is that? Why should making a girdle constitute a kinyan without anything else, that none of them can change their mind afterwards? Especially that Ashbam points out again, if they each made a chazaka, there's nothing to talk about. If at least we said they did the girdle and all of their names were picked and each one was assigned his portion, fine. But you're telling me that, for example, as soon as we picked out Reuven's name and we picked out the slip of paper that says he gets the north field, then immediately Shimon is going to the south field as well. Why? His name wasn't even picked yet. Nothing. Why shouldn't Shimon still have the ability to say, you know what, wait, let's divide it differently? And the answer is, you have to draw an analogy with how it was when they first divided up Eretz Yisrael, which we're going to talk about in great detail. And the next parak is going to be all about the dinim of Yerusha. And we're going to have a lot of discussion in the next parak about the details of how exactly they did the division of Eretz Yisrael in Yeshua's times. So, just like in Yeshua's times, they divided up Eretz Yisrael with a girdle, and that was binding. Once they picked the girdle that a certain shevet has a certain portion, then there's no backing out of that. Afkan begirdle, the same way over here, making a girdle is effective and there's no retracting from it. There is, by the way, a point that Rishonim made that's brought in various svarim from various Rishonim that say that a girdle is almost like has almost the strength of Ruach HaKodesh. It is a strong thing, And not just here, as far as dividing property, but as far as other areas in life as well, there's a girdle is a very strong thing, and you shouldn't go and start questioning the results of it, because again, that would be tantamount to questioning the results of the division of Eretz Yisrael. You even have you
nowadays.
you even have right, yeah. You even have the concept sometimes, like this, you know, we're familiar with people put a letter in Igros. There's a minhag that goes back hundreds of years before that of opening up a chumash or some other sefer and using that, which is a form of girdle. There's in fact a whole method called girdle hagra, which is where they use it's a whole complicated thing. It involves a particular edition of the chumash, and it involves various Tfilis and Tanesim and whatever, and then opening up the Chumash, and then following what to do based on what you see in it. There's a number of examples in recent Jewish history where we find the Girdle Agra was used in that way. One famous example is during the Israeli War of Independence. At one point, there was a convoy that was supposed to be bringing food to Yerushalayim that was ambushed, and then the people in it were killed by Arabs. Afterwards, they recovered the bodies. They were able to identify most of them, but there was still about a dozen that they couldn't. Sort of Rav Aryeh Levin, the famous tzaddik of Yerushalayim of that time, used the Girdle Agra and was able to identify based on the psukim that came up as they were trying each name. They was able to identify, for example, one that would come up a pasuk that has the name Yaakov, and another one that a pasuk that would hint to David, and so on and so forth. And they were able to identify all of the bodies. They were able to match them up with known names of people who had been in that convoy, and that Rabbanim of that time accepted that this is a valid thing, and then the bodies were identified that way and given to the family.
These boat came from America?
What?
The boat.
No, they're not talking about a boat, a convoy of trucks or whatever that was supposed to be going over land from one place to another. And Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim, was under siege at that time, and they were bringing food to it. So there's other examples. There's other examples of Girdle Agra being used. Another interesting one I came across once is when Aaron Cutler was trying to decide where he should go from Europe during the war to Eretz Yisrael or to America. He used the Girdle Agra. He came up with the pasuk that Hashem says to Aaron, "Lech lekras Moshe Hamidbara, go to Moshe in the desert." So he took that to mean the desert being America, which at that time was a desert of Torah, and the Moshe is Moshe Feinstein, who had come there a few years earlier. So he went to America. Anyway, so that's the girdle Agra specifically, but more generally, Rishonim bring that the girdle is not something that should be questioned. So here we're saying the same way you do it like the girdle that was done to divide Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara asks, Imal Halam Bakalpi Urim Vatumim. Yeah, but the girdle in Eretz Yisrael wasn't just a girdle where they put names into a hat or something. They had an official box that contains all the lots. They had the Urim Vatumim. In the next parak, we're going to learn in great detail about the whole procedure that was done. So Afkan, you're going to say over here, you know what kind of girdle is irrevocable? The kind where you have a kalpi and urim v'tumim, not just the kind where you have two brothers who are putting names into a hat and drawing them out. Amar Rav Ashi, but Rav Ashi says, fine. It's not. You're right. It's not so much that we're. It's not so much that we're analogizing it to the girdle of Eretz Yisrael, but rather by who hanah dekotzaisi v'hadadi. There is the hanah that one of them is listening to the other. That Reuven is saying.
So
you're accepting that I got mine, and therefore I'm accepting that you got yours. Gamriu makna l'hadadi. Therefore, they're willing to be makna. Therefore, they're willing to be makna to each other. So whichever one the girdle comes out, they decide, even without Urim V'Tumim, the fact is that they're willing to do a girdle so each one can get his portion, meaning that they don't want it like this. They could have decided instead that we're just going to have one big estate and we're just going to all continue living on it and managing it as partners. It's possible to do that. Instead, we're saying that no, they've all mutually decided, you know what, it's time for us to start our own individual lives and to have our own individual lands and go our own way. So now they don't want any more delay in it. So therefore, they're willing to be machne to each other on the basis of the results of the girdle. And therefore, even without Urim V'Tumim and all that, even so, we can say that they're accepting it, and that's that. Okay. So now that we established that basic point that a girdle is enough for a kinyan. Between the brothers. So So now, and by the way, that Rashbam points out, you know, you often have the expression, in the Gemara, Bahi Hana. You often say, for example, because of the Hana that a person is getting, therefore they're willing to do such and such. You have cases in Kiddushin, for example, where a woman received a certain Hana, not necessarily an actual Pruta from a man, and with that she's willing to be Makadish herself to him. The meaning of Bahi Hana is slightly different. It means, in other words, they want the kinyan to take place, and therefore they're willing to say that even though objectively, maybe we should say the fact is my name hasn't even been picked in the girdle yet. Nevertheless, the very fact that they showed with their actions that they want this to get over and done with, then therefore they're willing to say, let's go ahead and accept the results of the girdle, and that's that. Okay. So now that we established that basic point, now let's talk about what if they made such a girdle, and now it turns out now a monkey wrench is thrown in, which makes that the results of the girdle turn out to have been insufficient. So Itmar, Shnei Achen Shechoku, so two brothers divided up the property, Ubolahen Achmim Dinasayam, and then another brother came from Dinasayam, which they didn't know of until now. So therefore, they hadn't reserved a piece of the property for him. So now what do we do? Rav Amar Batla Machlokas. Rav says the whole division is void, and we have to start all over again. We have to start by dividing it into three portions, and then we can start and then we can make a girdle. Yes, until now we made a girdle, but that was where they made a proper division. Then we can say the girdle establishes, and as you say, the gomor machni, they're willing to be machni to each other. But here it turns out that the premise on which the girdle was made itself was flawed in the first place. Therefore we have to start all over again. Or Shmuel Amar Mekamtzin. Shmuel says that Mekamtzin, the word Mekamtzin literally means that we have to be stingy or frugal. Meaning, in other words, so the Rashbam explains what it means is each one is going to have to take off one third of his portion and give it to the other one. So, for example, in other words, the Rashbam says so. They started out; they inherited six properties. And the original division was going to be that each one is going to get three. Again, to keep things simple, let's say there's no girdle over here. So it's three and three, rather than otherwise it would have had to be four and two. Now it turns out you have the other brother. So each one has to take one of those fields, one third of what he got, and give it to him. And that way they all end up with two fields each.
The only thing is, the third brother doesn't have a fair choice to agree.
So Tosfos brings up that point. Loma Yigora, why should they got with a girdle? Why should we say that with him, they're going to give him whatever they want, without a girdle? So Tosfos explains Mekamtzim differently. What it means is that so they have three fields, for example. So each one took one complete field, and then the third one they divided between them. What we do now is, when we say Mekamtzin, then we're going to say that we're going to make a girdle on all three of the fields. Now, Rav had said Batla Machlokas in the sense that the whole girdle we made until now has no effect. Shmuel is going to say no. There is a certain effect to that original girdle. If the third brother ends up getting that field that they originally divided, then good. So we have, Reuven got the north field, Shimon got the center field, and now Levi, the new brother who showed up, gets the south field, and that's that. If the south field was the one that until now Reuven and Shimon had divided between them, then good. Otherwise, what we would say is, the third field is going to remain divided between them, and the other field is going to be divided, and a portion is going to be given to the new brother. So in other words, Tosfos says that according to Shmuel's Mekamtzin, we do. Unlike, the fact is there is going to be a girdle. So the third brother is not deprived of getting his portion by girdle. But we're going to have to see what are the results of the girdle, whether it keeps Reuven and Shimon still holding on to the original ones that they had gotten a complete field in the girdle, or whether we have to redivide things partially. But we don't start the division all over again.
But it also might depend if they already did for months.
I don't know. If that necessarily makes a difference. So you actually have a story in Bava Metzia and Hamafkid. You have a story where there was a rich yid in Rav Ashi's times named Mori Bar Isak, where a fellow came and said, "I'm your brother," and you have a whole discussion over there in the Gemara. We have to prove. Does he have to prove? I mean, obviously, he has to prove. He can't just stop and say that I'm your brother. The original thing was the Gemara says over there. He says, "I have Edim," but because Mori Bar Isaac is a powerful rich guy, they're afraid to give Edus and based in. So sort of Chista tells that sort of Chista was in his times actually. Sort of Chista tells Mori Bar Isaac in that kind of case, you're the one who has to bring Edim that he's not your brother. Anyway, Bekitzer, eventually it was proved that he is in fact a brother, and he does get a share. He does get a share of the estate. And then the Gemara discusses over there. Now, since then, Mori Bar Isaac had improved the property. Is the brother entitled to his share of those improvements as well? So yeah, it doesn't really matter how long it had been. In that case, apparently Mori Bar Isaac had been in possession of the property for a while, long enough to improve it. And yet we're saying that once the brother comes and we establish that he is in fact their brother, then he gets his fair share. So the Gemara discusses over there whether in fact he gets. And in that case, it turns out the Gemara says the brother was a cotton at the time. So that makes for a different deed. If the brother had been an adult at the time, then he wouldn't necessarily get a portion of the shvach, because Mori Bar Isaac had every right up until that point to be managing the property, but because the brother was a cotton, then he didn't have full rights to do that. Ein machzikin minichse cotton. So come on, I have a whole sugi on it over there. Anyway,
and then make it, you have a purpose then.
What? Usually you would have an apotropos. In this case, Mori Bar Isaac didn't know that this brother was going to come, so therefore no apotropos had been set up, right? But ordinarily, yeah, there would be an apotropos for it. There's other Rishonim who point out, the Ramban, the Rashba point out that since already they went to the trouble of dividing it exactly, so we have a concept called kum dina, let's leave the din basically where it is, and we're not going to store it, according to Shmuel, we're not going to store it all over again. So that's why Shmuel is going to say Mekamtsin, we have to give him his portion, but not by undoing the entire division that Rabban said.
Should have came in the beginning.
Yeah. So the Gemara continues. Now let's consider within Rav's opinion, who says that we undo the division and we start all over again, alma hodur dina, which means exactly that. It means, in other words, that even though we had we had decided, we still undo the whole thing and start all over. But elamayata, by that logic, hanibet tlosa dekaimi. What if you were going to have three partners? Let's say three partners or three brothers. Va'ozol beit shrei minayu polug. Two of them decided to undo to dissolve the partnership without checking with the third one. And let's say they go to a beis din hedyotis. And they figure out the value of the assets of the partnership, and each of them takes their portion. Would you say also that when the third one comes that he could and he could say, I don't like that division? And in fact, in Elam Metzias, the Gemara tells a story in that connection where there was Isser and Rav Safra had a partnership, and then Rav Safra decided to dissolve it without Isser's consent. And he went and did it only in front of two people, and the Gemara ends up saying that's no good. If he had done it in front of a beis din of three, even three hedyotis, then it would be good, but because he did it in front of two and it was without Isser's knowledge, then we say no good. Why did he not check with Isser? I don't know, Isser was out of town, let's say, and Rav Safra wanted out of the partnership. We know in the Gemara elsewhere, Rav Safra was the Dover Emes Bilvava. We had it actually, I think, earlier in our Masechta, that it's at the end of Makkos, primarily that Rav Safra would even whatever he was thinking that he's going to do as far as business, he's going to hold to that even if later on somebody offered a higher price. So we can be sure he wasn't doing it as anything dishonest, but whatever the reason was, he decided he needed out of the partnership. Anyway, the problem was that he didn't do it in front of a beis din of three, only of two. But the implication is, if he had done it in front of a beis din of three, even three hedyotis, then it would be valid.
Hedyotis means three.
The minimum beis din is three, but hedyotis means they don't have to have smicha. They just have to be regular Jews who are broadly familiar with the value, with how to value property. So you're going to tell me, says Rava, according to Rav's logic, that Batla Machloikas, if you're going to have, you have three members of a partnership, and two of them went in front of a beis din of three, and they divided it up, and later on, the third one comes and says, wait, I don't think you divided the assets fairly. Hochinami the Batla Machloikas. Are you going to say that the division is Batla, and we have to start all over? And we know that not. We know from that story in Eilat Metzias that it's not necessary to do that. Once they did in front of a Beis Din of Shloisha of three, even if it's Shloisha Had Yotis, even if it's three plain Jews, then it's a valid division. So Rav Nachman answers back. Hachi Hashta, what kind of a comparison is that? Hosim Nechisia Daitid Beit Tlosa Neikra. There, when the Beis Din of three is figuring out the value of the assets, they know that there were three partners. They're right now only two partners have shown up, so therefore they can still divide it on the basis we know that it has to be split three ways. So therefore, see, you're going to get this part and you're going to get this part, and we'll keep the third part in escrow until your third partner comes, and we'll give it to him. But at least to begin with, the facts that they were working with are that there were three partners. Whereas over here, to begin with, the brothers had no idea even that there was a third brother. So that when they divided up, it was only on the understanding that there are two. So therefore, Rav has every reason to say that they didn't even know all the facts, unlike that case with dividing up the partnership. And therefore, yes, that botla machloikas, we have to be mevatel their division and start all over again. So that explains Rav's shita.
You can go back to say, depends how much time went by from when they divided.
Again, it doesn't matter how much time. The fact remains that they may be muchzak. They were muchzak even to begin with because the karka belonged to their father and then their yoshim. They had chazaka in it all this time because as soon as their father passed away, then they were the owners of the land. Now it's just a matter of deciding who gets what part. That's what the Rashbam had made the point in the previous part of the sugya. That is why as soon as we pick Reuben's name and his portion, immediately Shimon is acquiring his portion, even though his name wasn't even picked yet, because they're already mochzeh. Yeah. Okay. Now, what about Shmuel's opinion? So according to Shmuel, that says Mekamtzin, however we understand that, whether like Rashbam, that it means that each of them takes one third of what he got and gives it to the other one, or whether like Tosfos, that it means that we make a new girdle, but we also keep in mind the results of the previous girdle.
Versus
Stira,
right?
No, that the Rashbam versus Tosfos, two different opinions, not Stira. We said, according to Shmuel Mekamtzin, what Mekamtzin means, Rashbam had understood one way, and Tosfos understands a different way.
Okay.
In fact, the Ritva points out also a problem with the Rashbam's explanation is it might come out that he's not going to get two parts that are contiguous, that are next to one another, because if each one is going to give him half of his, who says the two halves are going to be next to each other? So he says that's actually why the Rashbam, unlike Tosfos, who mentioned a case where there are three fields, the Rashbam made a point of saying that there are six fields, and each of them originally got three, and now we're saying each of them got two. So therefore, it's not a matter of taking two different halves. He's going to get the new brother is going to end up getting two complete fields. So according to Shmuel, lememra d'kumdina, so you're telling me then that once we decided something, yes, there was a reason to undo the previous one, but nevertheless, we're going to say whatever we can keep the way it was before, we're going to keep, and we're just going to change whatever needs to, what we're just going to adjust whatever needs to be adjusted in order to make things fair, in order to satisfy the valid claim of the third brother. But v'harav u'shmuel d'amitavayu, don't Rav and Shmuel both say, which we've learned several times, kur b'shloish that if the seller says I'm selling you a core of wheat for 30 saw, then he's able to change his mind and back out of the deal even when they're up to the last saw, because it's one bulk purchase of 30 and no meshicha, no kinyan has been done yet we're still counting it out, and no meshicha has been done on the full 30 saw all at one time. On the other hand, kur b'shloshim saw b'sela ani moichaloch. But if he says I'm selling you a kur for 30, and that's at the rate of one saw per sela, so as we discussed before, is it a matter of loshen achron or the various other considerations? Anyway, we say rishin kona, the first one as it's measured out, then he's kona. So the point is, in other words, that so now let's consider in that case he was supposed to get a kur. So either way, whether he said kur b'shloshim or whether he also added saw b'sela, why don't we say kum dina, and at least whatever was measured out, he should already be koine. if Shmuel is saying kum dina, meaning that we try not to undo something that's already been established. So already when they were starting to measure out, it was established. I'm selling you this wheat for this price. We measure out one saw, two saw, three saw, etc. Why shouldn't we say, if now in the middle the price goes up and the buyer says, or somebody offers more money, and the buyer says, and the seller rather says, you know what, I'd rather undo the sale and give it to, and then sell it to this other fellow. Why should he have the right to do that? Why shouldn't we say kum dina, whatever was already established? That the guy, fine, we haven't done a kinyan on it yet, but still we're saying kum dina, that we try to leave things as is, it sounds like, according to Shmuel, rather than undoing things completely.
Kum dina is only if they already did the dividing through lotto.
No, again, if they had made a kinyan, then there's no question. The point is over here, they hadn't really made a kinyan yet. All they did was they made the girdle, and then the third brother comes. So Shmuel is saying, rather than undoing the whole girdle, like Rav had said, we're trying to make adjustments within what we have right now. So why don't we say the same thing when it comes to the Kor B'Shloshim? We would say that at least we should say whatever he already did Meshicha on, fine, it wasn't a complete Kinyan because it's supposed to be a bulk purchase of 30, but why Takanah? Why don't we say whichever ones he already did Meshicha on, he should be Koina, and we're going to leave those in his possession, and the seller can't change his mind as far as those, only as far as the rest. And the answer is Hosam over Rabbana Milsa de Nichol El Moicha and Nichol El Keach. The answer is that in that case of the 30 saw, the Chachamim want to make things in a way that will be good for the seller as well as for the buyer. So in other words, that we want the Lekeach wants to, the Lekeach also wants to be able to have the option of backing out until the deal is completed. Because again, he would also, what if the price goes down, for example, and the Moicha would want if the price goes up. So therefore, so both of them are being Koina, the Chachamim evaluated, in other words, that both of them are willing to be Koina under those circumstances, that unless he says Sa B'Sela, if he only says Kor B'Shloshim, then it means that either one can change their mind down to the last Sa. When it comes to Rishon Kana, is different because then it means it's 30 transactions of one saw each, and each one, that's it, you did Meshicha, and there's no, and then once Meshicha is done, then that's that. So now that's as far as, so we're not going to say Kam Dina precisely because the Chachamim want to make it in a way that both the Moicha and the Lekeach have reason to want to buy and sell under those conditions, so they have the option of backing out if prices change. When it comes to this division of Karka, still, the fact is, we said they want to divide. They want to divide up the estate. They want to get it over and done with. So again, we said they want to get it over and done with, and that's why we said in the previous part of the sugya that they want to just they're willing to be machne to each other as soon as we establish which is Reuven's portion. Then automatically we want Shimon to be able to have his. That Ashbam brings in this connection, the expression the Gemara has in some places, kidra de be shutfi, when you have a pot that's owned by partners like Hamim of like. It's neither hot nor cold. In other words, because each one figures the other one will deal with it. When you have something in English, they call such a thing the tragedy of the commons. When you have a common area that everybody owns, then everybody figures, I don't need to be responsible for it. The other guy will be responsible for it. So now they're saying, you know what? We don't want that to be anymore. We want Reuven to have his portion and Shimon, his defined portion, and Shimon to have his defined portion. So we can actually, so each one will actually take responsibility and manage it rather than thinking that the other one will do it. So therefore, Rav figures that they do want to get it done with as soon as possible, or rather Shmuel figures they do want to get it over and done with as soon as possible. Therefore, Shmuel is going to say, even now when it turns out that the assumption that they started with is mistaken, because there is in fact a third brother, nevertheless, we don't want to start all over. We want to say, kum dina. As opposed to, again, in the case of the 30 saw, we don't want to say kum dina because the Moicha and the Lekeach both have an interest in leaving the thing open until the last saw. Okay, back everyone. So then.